From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Welcome to the show. This is Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. My name is Matt Frederick.
And my name is Ben Bolin.
And today we're going to talk about something that's a little out there. It's kind of fun. I enjoy it a lot.
Fun?
Yeah, this is fun, man. I enjoy this topic. You don't like this?
Fun?
Yeah. Wait.
No, I'm good with it. I guess I can see how some of it is fun because
it's real history, right?
It is real history.
Combined with some of the little crazier stuff. It's the perfect spot where here are the facts and here's where it gets crazy meat, at least for me.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So, let the badger out of the bag here. Let the cat out of the can.
The badger got in the bag now?
Yeah. Let's let the World War II badger get out of the bag here and talk about Nazis, the Nazi party.
Well, not specifically just the Nazis.
Right. Something else. Because you guys, Matt and I run into Nazi topics fairly often.
They're a bit pervasive in the conspiracy world.
Right. And one of the reasons they're so pervasive is that there is often a grain of truth to the claims. Now, a lot of the claims may get exaggerated, but it is true that the Nazis tried a lot of weird stuff, man. They got weird with it.
Yeah, they
did. And I think that some of the insanity of the regime there, which did have catastrophic and tragic consequences, that have scarred the world in the present day even, it came from a kind of underlying, really bizarre place. And this all leads us to today's episode, which is not just Nazis, but one of our mutual favorite topics, Nazi UFOs.
You know, I just realized, Ben, that I think that's the longest it's ever taken for us to get to the actual topic.
Right.
Which, you know, it's in the title when someone wanted to click and listen to this.
We could have just jumped in.
It's fun, though. I enjoy doing it this way.
So in World War II, some interesting things happen. Fighter pilots and I guess even some civilian pilots for the Allies start reporting something they call Foo Fighters. Foo Fighters are these points of light that follow along with the aircraft or seem to do physics-defying aerial maneuvers. The pilots don't know what they are. They don't know where they're coming from.
Well, and one of the reasons a lot of these pilots thought it was something otherworldly or something from the Nazis, some high-tech thing, is because there are all these rumors occurring at the time about insane Nazi technology in these different areas, in propulsion and planes,
sure,
in even submarines and all this kind of stuff. So I think the pilots were more, I don't know, it was almost like they were looking for something.
So
right?
They were more prone to believe it. Maybe they had a confirmation bias of
sorts. Exactly.
Yeah, and the thing is that this leads us to these two facts together. They lead us to today's question. Did the Nazis really have secret technology? Did they have something that would be like a UFO? Before we continue, though, there's one thing that we do have to point out, and that is that all a UFO is an unidentified flying object. It could be a bird. It could be Superman.
It
could be something that came off of a propeller. It could just be, you know, a very confused fish.
Yes. But the cool thing about the Foo Fighters is that those are trained pilots who would normally know pretty much anything that's flying near them, what it is, and they could probably tell you exactly, oh, this is a blank.
Right.
Plane.
Yeah.
And they're telling you, I have no idea what this thing was. And it was doing things that physically defy other planes.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point, because these are not just green pilots. These are experienced combat veterans in many cases. But with that being said, that a UFO, we often, almost always, hear it associated with aliens or extraterrestrials. It might just be a misidentified aircraft, But when we go to Nazi technology, Matt, I'm gonna give this one to you. Here's where it gets crazy.
They absolutely were trying secretive technology, new innovative things. You can look at a lot of inventions or projects.
Sure, R&D.
You can look at a lot of the R&D projects, like the Horton HO229.
That is my favorite.
The Horton brothers. They were really innovative in. Was that jet propulsion?
Yeah, they were experts in aerodynamic design, jet propulsion. They were essentially aerospace engineers and rocketry men in a lot of ways. The Nazis had real life rocket scientists who were doing work that was far, far beyond stuff that Russia, the British, the French, the United States, even the Japanese were doing. And this is interesting because the grain of truth is there. The Horton HO 229 was built in a flying wing design that was revolutionary for the time. It is very, very difficult to overstate how crazy this thing was. Now, did it work? Well, the Allies won the war, and there was never a fleet of Horton HOs that we know of flying around. But that's not the only thing. The Nazis also had other attempts to make even like flying discs, like the SAC AS-6. But what this gives us is this gives us a couple things. This gives us the knowledge that, yes, there really were unorthodox experiments with flying vehicles. And the question is, how many of these made it to the drawing board? How many of them never made it off the drawing board? How many of them actually got tested in flight? There are a few provable cases of it. So not very many, but there are provable cases where we know that Nazi scientists did exhibit this. And of course, let alone, that's not even counting their unmanned flight research, their rocketry programs.
Now here's where the skeptical side of me comes in.
Okay.
I've seen the pictures of the Horton HO and the SACS AS-6, and they don't sound anything like what these Foo Fighters looked like, or at least the reports of the Foo Fighters.
You know, that's a great point, and I think that it's a very important point to make at this time, because the descriptions of the Foo Fighters do not sound like terrestrial vehicles. They sound like some sort of weird sentient light. And
when I hear it, just from being in video production and working with cameras and lenses a lot, it sounds like a weird lens flare to me. And I would love to see footage of it just to really analyze it and look at the angles and direction where they're seeing this flashing light.
Yeah, and it's weird because a lot of the pilots at this time, of course, they didn't have recording equipment necessarily. They had audio, and there might be some records of that audio, but who knows what happened to most of them. And Foo Fighters could be explained by any number of, let's call them, mundane explanations. I love lens flare. I think that's a strong candidate. There's also the idea that it could be some sort of electrical discharge, right? Or maybe people were suffering from some sort of disorientation or vertigo. Or maybe we can't attribute this to a single cause. You know, maybe it's looking back in retrospect that gives us the tendency to group all of these things as one type of event, you know? And I think it's possible, but also, let's keep in mind there's another role here, which I guess I should have mentioned earlier, and that's wartime propaganda on both sides.
Yeah, that little guy.
Yeah. So both sides, World War II, the Allies and the Axis powers, were just throwing BS at each other, left and right, doing propaganda for the citizens when they could get access to radio waves and stuff, doing dropping leaflets. And then having spies disperse rumors about, you know, anything from American and Nazi Supermans, like real life Captain Americas, you know.
That's so weird to me, trying to play and trying to negatively affect the morale of the other side. So interesting to me. It's a strange game of chess in a way.
And it has some tangible, powerful effects. But with that in mind, we have to ask ourselves, ourselves, is the idea of Nazi secret technology. Did the exaggeration come from history later, or did it come directly from the Nazis? Did they happen to play up these claims a little bit more? I'll tell you what. The one thing we do know is that where people will say that we're remiss if we don't mention this. The Brotherhood of the Bell is a book that came out in English that comes from the idea was fostered by a Polish writer. And this Polish writer claimed that he had spoken with some ex-Polish intelligence agency members and that they said they had interviewed some Nazis in the wake of World War II. And that one of these Nazis, a high-ranking official in the regime, had revealed to them that the Axis scientists, had cracked the code on what would essentially be anti-gravity, negating the normal effects of gravity, and that they had built something that looked like a bell, and that this bell was able to somehow defy the bounds of physics and travel at incredible speeds, make sharp corners. And another thing, I know I'm going kind of off the deep end here, Matt, another thing that's really interesting is in some ancient Indian myths, there are descriptions of flying machines that were understood to work off of some...
The Vimanas?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, good call. And that I can't remember, is this the Upanishad where these are at? Okay, well, somebody will tell us if we're wrong, and I will look back and correct that. But the story here becomes a game of connecting very tenuous dots, or making very tenuous connections between dots. There's another thing called the Kecksburg incident, which people can look up for more information. I don't know if we touched on that in our video.
I don't think we did.
Okay, well, that is something that we will probably return to in the future then. But with all this, what I'm saying here is with all this, a lot of the emphasis on Nazi UFOs entered the mainstream after the publication of these books. Now, of course, the Polish author doesn't have tangible proof that he can offer. And, of course, a lot of the people who make claims about the so-called Nazi bell and stuff don't have the most credibility. Let's put it that way.
The most?
Yeah, they don't have the most credibility in the world. And there is a site in Europe, however, that is a flooded mine.
Yes.
You remember this one?
The concrete structure that allegedly housed the bell?
Yes, and that was... Again, allegedly, a secret testing ground. Now, because the mine is flooded, people haven't been able to secure access to the entirety of the mine. So people really don't know what's down there. And who knows, man? Who knows what they would find down there? I'm going to say probably a lot of corpses and mining equipment, but there could be something else. The only way to know is to go down there.
Oh, man, what? That would be so awesome if that was actually there, hidden deep inside that mine, and some divers went in there and found... Guess what? Making a movie.
We're making a movie
We're going to make a movie about that.
Is it Nicolas Cage?
Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage in the Nazi mines. It would be a sequel. It would be a sequel to National Treasure.
Yeah, the third or fourth one.
Yeah, I don't know if you can even call it a sequel at that point. It's just like fifth in the series.
And would a Nazi bell, remnants of a Nazi bell, really be a national treasure?
I guess it depends on the nation. So the one thing that we can say that is a little bit more of the grain of truth stuff. So we've mentioned some of the more provocative claims, and we've also mentioned, I think, that while there is some proof, it seems that a lot of the grain of truth aspect of this has been exaggerated. So let's talk about one of the strangest things. We're going to get to the closest that we know of provable Nazi UFOs, however indirectly, and that starts with a little something called Operation Paperclip.
Yeah, this is when German scientists, after the war, after World War II, they came over to the U.S. and they started working for U.S. agencies like NASA, Or was it NASA at the time? I guess it wasn't.
Well, they started working for the War Department directly. They also started working with some private arms contractors, defense contractors. And the Operation Paperclip was top secret because let's remember that after the close of the war and the discovery of various acts of genocide on the part of Nazi Germany, people were not trying to invite anyone affiliated with the regime into any sort of safety, you know? And so Operation Paperclip was conducted in secret, and the OSS, precursor to the CIA, worked to craft identities for these German scientists, several of whom were, yes, working against their will. So I'm not saying that all of these people were, you know, trigger-happy murderers or something. Mm-hmm. But they were affiliated with this regime. They were doing work for the Nazi government. The United States did cast that aside, give them some form of immunity, take them away to the United States, and have them continue their rocketry research. Most directly, I would think of Wernher von Braun, who was one of the leading researchers in the U.S. in rocketry after his time with the Nazis. This stuff that they worked on allowed them to advance U.S. rocketry, of course, way past where it was when they began, and way faster than anybody thought they would, which leads us to, ultimately, the descendants of this secret Nazi technology.
In particular, that flying wing, Horton H. O., at least that's the one that I think of as the best example, which then became a stealth bomber.
Yeah. Yeah. The principles behind that used there. And I'm thinking even more, if we want to go to space with it, if we want to take the alien idea of a UFO, then the rocketry work by these former Nazi scientists ultimately led to the ability to create the rockets that we would need to take human beings into space, which means that NASA created a UFO, I guess, descended from Nazi technology. So weirdly enough, space shuttles are one of the best examples of secret Nazi technology doing amazing things.
That's pretty crazy.
It is pretty crazy, but it's also kind of a work in progress, because we have to realize that at this point, a lot of the story is still classified, which just baffles me. But, you know, information about Pearl Harbor is still classified to a degree.
So. Yeah, JFK, those files haven't been released.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's true. No, it's fine. There's literally stuff they don't want you to know. So we've explored some of the claims about Nazi UFOs, and we have a pretty exciting time ahead of us, I think, for anybody who's interested in this topic, because there is so much more speculation out there, but there's also so much more to discover. Who knows what files might be rotting in a filing cabinet somewhere in Eastern Europe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what's sitting there in a dank basement in the Kremlin?
And we're in a flooded mine.
Right, exactly. In a flooded mind. And with that, we will tie up this episode, and thank you guys, as always, for listening. We do hope that you enjoyed our exploration of the strange story of Nazi UFOs. You know what I'd like to ask for, Matt? If we have anybody who feels they've had an experience with a Foo Fighter, I'd love to hear that description. Now, I'm not talking about Dave Grohl.
Okay, yeah, because I've had one of those.
You have one of those. The things that we'd like to hear about are your thoughts on secret Nazi technology. Has it been suppressed, or has it simply been exaggerated? And is there something, of course, more specific that you would like us to dig into? Because, as always, our best topics come from you, our listeners. So let us know about it. Give us a holler on Facebook. You can drop us a tweet on Twitter. And, Matt, what do people do if they're not into the whole social media thing?
Well, if you just can't handle Twitter and Facebook, you can always send us a good old-fashioned email. We are conspiracy@discovery.com.
For more on this topic and other unexplained phenomena, visit testtube.com/conspiracy stuff. You can also get in touch on Twitter at the handle @conspiracystuff.